welcome to another episode of the Aprio Voice, a podcast brought to you by the Aprio Group. I'm Thomas, and I'm thrilled to have you join us here today. I focus on digital strategic communications and helping our clients at Aprio navigate the complex world of technology within their business communications. The purpose of this podcast is, among other things, to bring you insights from industry leaders, innovators, and experts who are shaping the future of their respective fields. So today, we have a very special guest with us, Joshua Werler, the CEO of Mindstone. Joshua Werler is an EdTech enthusiast, advisor, and investor. He has started multiple businesses, scaling them to over 150 employees and some very significant revenues. Currently, as CEO at Mindstone, he focuses on building a skill-building platform that bridges the gap between the potential AI has to offer and the 10 to 40% productivity increase promised to employees across your business. Previously, he was co-founder and chief product officer at Super Awesome, the world's largest kids tech company, which was acquired by Epic Games in 2020. Thereafter, Josh founded Mindstone with the mission to democratize access to practical AI and empower a global community of lifelong learners. By 2023, Mindstone became the world's largest and fastest growing practical AI community, transforming how people worldwide leverage AI. Mindstone has also been listed as one of the top EdTech companies to watch in 2024 by Time Magazine. Josh, with that intro, welcome to the podcast. We're excited to have you here. And to start off, maybe you could just tell us a bit about your journey and how you came to co-found Mindstone.
First of all, thank you very much for having me. Been an interesting journey to date, I guess. The reality is that the first company that we built with my co-founders at the time was really all about basically me figuring out how to build a business. And we had a really, I think, important mission, which was about building a safer internet for kids. And I was very happy to spend a significant portion of my life doing so. But I always had a really strong passion for learning. I always loved learning, but I hated education. And I'm definitely not the type of person to sit on a beach for more than 3 days. So after Super Awesome, I had to figure out where did I want to spend the next 20, 30 years of my life. And I thought, well, it was time to actually look at where I thought I could have the biggest possible impact, and very quickly came around to the education space because of that passion around it, but also because I think the technology is just severely behind where it should be. And fundamentally, I'm an engineer, and I like solving big challenges that can have big impact when we are successful. So that was the starting point of Mindstone, which was we were building a learning platform that reasoned from the problem backwards. So not taking into account the current system. If you try to figure out what would be the best possible learning experience you could build in today's world without thinking about the current education system as it stands, what would be the solution you'd build? And so we set out to build that 4 years ago. And we had three core pillars, which was one, the idea that anything you want to learn online today, you can, if you know where to start, if you are at ease with technology, if you know how to learn, if. And so the idea was, can you make that more of a reality for more people? The second pillar was around the science of learning. We know a lot more about how the brain works than what most people understand. Can you weave some of that into a solution so that it becomes easier for people to use? And then the third bit was actually a slightly harder thing for me to get, and it only started to become clear after I started investing in the space, which is that two people with the same level of skill, one with a degree from a top-tier university, one without, don't get access to the same opportunity in life. And so in the industry, you call this a signaling problem, which is that it's not enough to help people learn a particular skill. You actually have to give them the tools to be able to show the world that they have acquired these skills, because otherwise they won't even get to an interview and it won't unlock the opportunity to get to. So those were the kind of three pillars we started with. And then the reality is, by the time we had built this platform, which took quite a while to get, it took about 3 years or so to build. Well, by that time, there was really only one skill that people are interested in, which is the time we live in now. And that's how to use AI to be more productive. about a year and a half ago, everything changed. We use a lot of AI under the hood. And so we just decided, at least for the time being, we are entirely going to focus on how do you help non-technical staff in companies take the benefits of this technology? How do you help them use this technology in their day-to-day so that we don't end up in a world where all these jobs are getting automated and people lose their jobs, but instead all of these jobs are getting enhanced and everyone gets to enjoy the fruits of what this technology is able to provide, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So it sounds to me like you were building the sort of scaffolding, the platform for this learning, this new approach to learning that would bring together technology and people's own abilities and ways of learning. And then AI kind of happened all at the same time and just really gave you that sort of validity and that business case. And as
absolutely
right, and so as you say, I mean, we're heading to a time where we're going to need to really upskill quicker, we're going to need to learn faster and really tool up. I'm quite interested in how you've integrated AI into your own services, as well as how it feeds into Mindstone's mission. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so I think we are probably, if you put us in the learning space, we're probably the most advanced company around there in terms of how we leverage AI. We are all about helping people understand how to use AI. We don't ourselves develop a better version of GPT-4 or whatever, mm-hmm. right? So it's all about using it. Now, on the platform, we look at every single thing through the lens of learning. How do we help you build a particular skill in the fastest way possible, in the most practical way possible? And so a very good example is that we have a sandbox, which is at first view could appear like a simple skin on GPT-4, which is you're able to execute prompts. Right? You can execute prompts on Claude, you can execute prompts on ChatGPT, so it doesn't appear dramatically different. But the difference is that when you execute them on our platform, not only do you get the result of the prompt, so the AI responds back to you, but you have a second AI that sits in the background that looks at the quality of the query that you formulated. It rates the quality of your query, tells you how you could have improved it, and gives you a better version of that query that would have given you a better result from the AI. And so this is our way of not just giving you a way to use AI, but actually to constantly feedback on how you could have improved your interaction with that AI to get to more productive, more useful results in the future. That's one of the things I'm most excited by what we built. We also have like a prompt library, which we use for companies. So when companies, when they go through the program, they get to see what are the most effective prompts that their colleagues have been using. There's a little bit of a competitive aspect of who can build the best prompt across the business, because they're all getting rated and everyone wants to get to a 10 out of 10. And the first that gets to a 10 out of 10 gets a prize and all of those types of things. So really from a service perspective, that is how we integrated it there. And I think your second question was about the mission, right? How does it integrate into the mission? Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So if we think about how it integrates itself into our mission, we are all about building the skills that empower each individual at both a personal and a professional level in the future. And right now, if you don't know how to use AI, it is by far the biggest leverage skill that you can learn that will have a direct impact on both your personal and your professional life. And insofar as we are all about impact, it makes a ton of sense at the stage that we're at, and we're still fairly small. I mean, we punch above our weight by running the biggest practical AI community in the world, but at a company level, we are very small. So focus is really important. And so if we are real about wanting to have the impact that we set out to have, we need to focus on the skill that has the biggest possible has the biggest possible effect on someone's life. And right now there's just nothing that comes even close. I mean, AI is number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 together.
Phenomenal. Yeah, and I loved what you were saying there just about the sort of gamification aspect and sort of learning as you build, and that feedback quality, or that personality that AI has, that very, very few previous forms of technology that we've used have had. So it really does sort of lend itself to, a technology that can really teach you how to use itself as you go. So really, really interesting to hear how you've kind of, walked, moved in and owned that space. In terms of, I mean, we've all heard this quote around, AI is not going to take your job, but someone who knows how to use AI just might. And essentially, I think, that has quite a number of important aspects that we need to consider for the future. But could you share perhaps just some more sort of practical examples of how AI is being used today to improve some of that productivity and learning, and why that adage, why that is true, if it is true, that knowing how to use AI is essentially going to be your biggest investment going forward.
So I can give you two direct examples, one really simple one and one which is a bit more advanced, both of which I use a lot myself. Right? So lots of people currently use AI in order to get an answer to a question. The problem is it's basically they're used to using technologies in the way that they've been using Google, and then you get to a particular answer, and that's kind of how you've been trained to use technology. The power of these models is in spaces that you previously were not able to use Google. I would even argue all the way to the point where if previously you were using Google for a particular task, that should be a red flag that it is not an area in which you might want to use the current crop of artificial intelligence. Now, there is a whole other set of tasks that we never use technology for, that this technology is extremely good at. So one of my favorite tricks is rather than asking it to give you answers, ask it to ask you questions. So instead of asking it what would be a great strategy for my business to go, I don't know, expand to the US, ask it, give it as much context as possible about the your particular decision, your particular problem, and then finish by ask me one question at a time to help me think through, validate, or test my own hypothesis and my own decisions, wait for my answer in between. Very simple. And suddenly, what the AI does is the AI will ask you questions to help you test your own reasoning that you put in before. It's very simple, but now you no longer care about hallucinations because if it asks you a weird question, you just go on to the next question. But the only thing you're trying to get out of the AI is to help you think. So you're also developing yourself whilst you're doing it, and you are inevitably improving on what you had before. You are still in the driving seat because you're the one that decides. What do you agree with? What do you not? Do you change your mind? Do you not change your mind based on your own thinking? And this is obviously what a really good coach would do with you, challenge you purely through questions. But all of that process can now be automated. It's a really, really powerful, different way of using AI. And I use it on every single important decision I have to make as a CEO today.
Amazing. Wow. Every single decision. Yeah. And I
Yeah.
mean, I guess that
Sorry, go ahead.
that's a good, no, that that's it. That's a good indicator of kind of where we're going. I mean, in my personal sort of work, I've been astounded at how quickly I've built trust. How quickly I've started to rely on this thought partner, as you've described it there, to kind of guide through decisions. And I can only imagine, in an area like yours, how important it is to know, really, really know and understand how to communicate with AI, essentially, how to bring it in the most effective way, and how to kind of converse almost. In your opinion, what and you mentioned it earlier, you mentioned the sort of overlay with people understanding AI to unpack their professional lives. But I just want to touch on it sort of more broadly. There's been a lot of talk about AI assistants, becoming more established. How do you think AI is likely to start impacting our lives, not just in the professional sense, but in the all encompassing sense? Any thoughts on that?
So, I'm actually on the spectrum where I still think, as much as AI is hyped, I still think it is underhyped, but for very different reasons that most people talk about. I forgot who said this, but there was this famous quote around, we often overestimate what we can do in a year and underestimate what we can do in 10 years. And I think that is what is happening here, which is that we are only a year and a half in to the release of ChatGPT. This is not that long, but with this technology as it stands, I am seeing dramatic productivity increases right now. If the technology stopped developing entirely, purely based on people understanding how they can use these tools, we are probably looking at 20, 30, 40% productivity increase just by using the technology as it stands today. But what we're going through at the moment is that not only are we help, like, does everyone have to go through that cycle, the technology is still developing at a pace that is absolutely crazy. We're taping this on a Monday. Tuesday, Llama 3405B is coming out, which is the next Meta model.
Right.
And it's fully open source. So far as I understand, it's supposed to be as good, if not better, than GPT-4. We just had GPT-4o Mini that came out last week, which is a great model, better than GPT-3.5, but at a third of the price. So you're starting to get the commoditization of intelligence that is spreading, which means that you can brute force a whole bunch of different problems that before were economically not viable. Mm. And like, it does take a little bit of time for people to adapt this in their workflows. So people don't change their minds that quickly, and people specifically don't change their habits that quickly. Most people, anyways. And that is why it's taking a little bit longer, and that's why you end up with some people saying, oh, well, this technology is not delivering what it promised to do. But this is not Web3. This is not NFTs. Like, the impact is actually right there. And I can point to many companies, ours included, that are using it every single day, all the time. So it's already delivering. It's just a mindset shift that we're still going through. I mean, at a personal level, to give you an idea, these large language models are dramatically better at recommending which TV show I should watch at night than Netflix, Amazon, or Apple is. I have already transitioned. Every night I use it. If I don't know what TV show to watch or movie to watch, I use my own built GPT, which is trained on the movies that I like, and it is absolutely spot on. So even in our personal lives, this is something that changes everything. I have a GPT planner. When I go to a new city, it recommends which restaurants I should visit and so on.
Incredible. Yeah, and I guess that those are both great examples of how it's going to, how it's already sort of available. All of that technology is already available. And as you mentioned, sort of 30 to 40% productivity gains. Let's unpack that for this audience. I mean, on a very basic level, you know, if you were to look at a comms team that might be sort of unpacking, you know, compiling press releases on a day-to-day, on a daily basis, they might get through, you know, 30 to 40% more iterations and closer to final a hang of a lot quicker than they would have a year and a half ago, is essentially what you're saying. And that same methodology could be applied across the communications function, across the not just from a thought partner perspective, but actually from a practical use perspective. It's essentially designing, and correct me if I'm wrong, but what Mindstone is looking at helping people with is designing those tools with available technology, whatever's available currently, to really make their day-to-day jobs more effective and more productive. And that is all available kind of right now as we speak, right?
So we're not really helping people design the tools. We're helping them use them, right? So we help them use ChatGPT or Copilot or Gemini or Zapier or all of the tools that are popping up, Gamma, Perplexity, all of these. We help them understand how they can change their workflows by introducing these tools and get to dramatically better outcomes. And what I've also seen is lots of people and lots of companies focus on getting to a result faster. They're focusing on automation. They're focusing on basically cutting resource in different ways. What I find is actually a better way of looking at this, and actually a better and bigger opportunity, is that this technology moves the bar up for everyone. If you think about your average job as a knowledge worker, right, depending on the importance of your task, you would or you would not involve a colleague at some point. If the task is really important, you would ask somebody else to look it over, to give you some feedback, to figure out how you could improve it. And you might go through 1, 2, 3, 4 loops. If it's really important, you might have 4, 5, 6 people feed into whatever the piece of work is in order to make sure that you can you really get to the best possible result.
Right.
So the reason we have that is that the higher the criticality of the work, the more we need to make sure it's good. Now, what is happening with AI is that you no longer have an excuse for any piece of work to not go through that loop. Because now that loop is free. Well, almost free. It costs you less than a cent. And so the type of work that never used to go through the loop because you didn't want to bother a colleague or you didn't have access to an expert that could actually help you with it, now you do. Now you can actually send this through that feedback loop, which improves the quality of your work. And so it's not always that it just gets you there faster. It's that the quality of the job you're doing improves dramatically. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a great way to illustrate it. And just on that, I mean, you know, I could imagine a lot of perhaps pressure. Well, you know, if we position it the way we're hearing it sort of happen out there, is that a lot of juniors are pushing for AI, but generally there's a sort of senior leadership that knows they need it, but doesn't always know how to support employees, you know, from junior level all the way up, in taking the journey towards learning AI. What are you seeing there? What are you seeing? Are you seeing the penny drop? Are you seeing, you know, the veil fall and everyone sort of understanding, you know, how this is going to be useful to their entire teams and it's not a threat? What sort of changes are you seeing out there, Josh?
So we're seeing everything, like from people leaning in dramatically to people still being very skeptical of what it might do. The biggest problem that we see here is that there's a lot of noise, a lot of smoke and mirrors in the industry. It's no secret that a lot of the Web3, NF3, NFT folks basically changed their CV and are now AI experts. Everyone says they're an AI expert. And so the problem is that those people are then getting mixed in the bag with people that actually focus on leverage this technology in practical ways. And to the average person, That means that they look at 10 people and only one out of those 10 actually knows what they're doing, but they don't really know how to spot the one person over the other nine. And so that's contributing to all the noise that's out there. And that's also why so many people are on that spectrum. If you do happen to actually find a person that really knows what they're talking about, and you can sit with them for even just 10 minutes, and they show you one or two use cases of how they're using AI on a daily basis, that tends to be all that's required to take a skeptical person into a direct advocate. It's that 10-minute type period. But that's why they're all over the map still. Now, I do think that this is going faster. So we are definitely seeing, I mean, we're a direct result of this accelerating. Our business is now growing properly. We are signing contracts like we've never signed them before. We are signing contracts of a size that we never thought we would be signing today. And at the end of the day, economics is going to take care of the rest, because most of the world today still is capitalist, or at least the Western world. And when your competitors, when other companies, other service providers, other product companies start to be able to do twice as much with half the resources, your company stops existing. And so that is an extremely big driver. And I do hope that people realize that quickly enough. And there will be people that will realize it later, and they'll have to deal with the consequences. And some of the problems that arise are that if you are at the top of an organization and you are about to retire, you might not care enough. Because you're not the one that has to deal with the problems afterwards. And so that's part of the problem. The other problem is that it is portrayed as scary because it is put in the bucket of technology. And lots of people that are not lots of people, but people that haven't grown up with technology at the core of what they do to get a job done are more reticent to engage with technology. But what they're forgetting here is that this technology is actually perfect for them, because it was Jeremy Utley, who I work with quite a bit. He had this interesting consideration where he was saying, this technology gets more powerful with the amount of experience that you have. Right. Because if you can layer your experience, your context, your perception on top of the grunt work that the AI does right now, it actually supercharges it, and you're able to get your really interesting results. So theoretically, actually, the most experienced people in the industry should be able to look at really interesting improvements in their own performance. But they're a bit more scared of technology to begin with, and so you end up with that kind of second dynamic.
So we may see a scenario where there's a lot of catching up and not enough advancing if we're not careful. Just on that, I mean, let's talk more broadly. I know you're clearly an optimist, and so you should be. This is where your focus lies, and I don't think AI is going anywhere anytime soon. But what do you see as the greatest threats? What are you seeing as the greatest threats for larger companies, especially those with a significant workforce, perhaps in emerging markets such as where we work quite a lot?
So this is it's a very good question, and one that I think is not effectively portrayed at the moment, because the reality is, as society, we have two choices with what is happening. We can lean back, not act, because either we are scared or because we're skeptical of the technology, whatever the reason is, but basically we can choose not to change the way we work. And then we will end up at a tipping point where technology ends up replacing a lot of the roles that we have across the organization. Mm-hmm. And the organization will not really have a choice, because all of their competitors around them will be doing the same, which means you end up in, again, the economic argument of having to stay competitive. Now, if we want to avoid that, one of the only ways to avoid that, other than banning the technology itself, which I don't think is possible because they're open source now, everyone can use them everywhere, so I think we're kind of past that. The only way to avoid that is to give people the tools to understand how to leverage this technology so that we each are able to enjoy the benefits that come with it. We're each more productive, which means that we are all working to higher levels of productivity. So we're not trying to get to the same level of productivity with fewer. We're trying to get to higher levels of productivity, better quality of work all over, in which case we are all able to keep our jobs. We are maybe able, we have to transition. Like the things that I used to do a year ago, I definitely don't have to do today. But we are all in a situation where we're able to take the fruits of this technology instead of being automated by it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And okay, so I mean that's a good way to kind of speak to the mitigation around these threats. Are there any specific strategies that could help companies sort of break through or upskill their employees more effectively in a quicker way?
So there are a few things. One is, I would say, they need to get their act together on the AI policy internally. There is no reason why people shouldn't be using this technology throughout the business. If you think about the fact that it costs only $25 a month for a corporate license of ChatGPT, you can get this less for Copilot and for Gemini if you include it in either G Suite or the Microsoft Office Suite. Mm-hmm. That is probably the lowest or the most obvious lever across the business that everyone should start to experiment with. So get an AI policy in place, make sure that people have access to this, and then try to create a culture where people are incentivized to experiment. And you will be surprised who in the business ends up leaning in, and then showcase those individuals. Use them to help the others understand what's possible. And once you have that culture there, you could then start to work towards spreading it throughout the organization and little by little becoming more of an AI first organization to begin with.
Nice. That's great. So all right. Well let's bring it a little closer to home. I mean, Aprio does a lot of work with corporate communications teams, with investor relations teams. We sit close to the executive leadership, close to the decision makers within the organizations, who are largely responsible for speaking to stakeholders, you know, on a day-to-day basis. And that's obviously a vital area. It often goes a little underappreciated, I think. Until there's a crisis, until something goes wrong. So protecting corporate brands, certainly for us and for the decision makers we deal with, is core to kind of what it is that we're doing. How do you think AI is likely to shape these roles sort of fairly broadly moving to, you know, let's say by 2030? How is AI likely to shape, first of all, the landscape around crisis and crisis preparedness, and then how are these roles, these senior leadership roles, likely to shift and change within the next 6 to 7 years?
So I mean, 6 to 7 years in AI is a lifetime.
Beyond.
So in crisis management here and corporate communications, this technology is absolutely transformational. Again, as a direct example, so many people will now use a large language model to think about their corporate communications before they would have to involve somebody else. So there's going to be a question on what is the value proposition that corporate communications will have to put forward that layers on top of language. There might be at some point a development of specific large language models for crisis management. I could imagine some of those kind of popping up and companies making real value propositions around that. But the entire profession there is likely, within the next 7 years, going to go through a fundamental reshift. I think that somebody 7 years from now in corporate communications or crisis management will not recognize the job that exists today. Fundamentally, it's one of the areas that is extremely strongly impacted.
Yeah, as is, I imagine, broader communications, marketing, advertising, yep. All of these sort of areas where information is critical or has been critical, and you spoke to it earlier, where things have to go through iteration after iteration and have to go through various levels of approval and have to have a very established loop before they kind of get out into the public domain. Set up correctly, essentially, you can fast track that entire process.
There's so much there, especially when it's about crafting language. I mean, these are literally called large language models, and they are only getting better. And crafting language is something they are extremely good at. Now, they are not yet at a point of a great communication expert, but they, no question, will be, which means that it's no longer going to be about communication crafting. It's going to be about strategy much more than anything else.
Fascinating. I just want to quickly touch on, we had systems go down across the globe with a Microsoft linked outage. CrowdStrike sort of stepped up and took the blame for it. And a lot of questions have been raised around, preparedness and readiness and whether we've got too much faith in our existing sort of tech providers, tech giants out there. And then, of course, the impact that AI is likely to have on all of that from a cybersecurity perspective, on both ends, from a bad actor perspective, and then also from the perspective of readying yourself as an organization and using AI to monitor threats, monitor weaknesses, etc. But broadly speaking, where do we sit from a tech perspective? Where does someone, and you mentioned it earlier, someone who perhaps hasn't grown up in this environment, hasn't grown up as a technologist or as a someone who's adopted technology from the get-go, where do we all sit as organizations facing sort of technology today, and how is AI likely to make us more or less secure in the next few years?
It's a really big question. I think the easiest framework to think about this is to think about AI as a tool. And a dramatically powerful tool, a more powerful tool than we have ever had before. And it is getting better faster. Now, that means that there is going to be greater good and greater bad. So the risk level goes up of bigger bad consequences, just as the risk level goes up of bigger good consequences. Ultimately, it comes down to us as humans and how do we keep in check the bad and make the good come out. And I am positive that most people in the world are trying to do good. And so that we end up, so long as the ecosystem is open, I'm a big proponent of open source here. So long as the ecosystem is open and you're giving enough people around the world the possibility of building great stuff to keep the bad in check, then I think it is clear you're basically making a bet on humanity versus the closed source models where you're making a bet on a few small companies. I think it is much more likely that one or two organizations or small groups of people decide to go rogue and suddenly have massive impact on it than it is to think that humanity as a whole would. Right? So you would want to build a system where enough people, everyone has access to this technology, have as many eyeballs as possible on the technology in order to make sure we are building the guardrails as fast as we are building the technology. And then ultimately, I think we'll be fine. I mean, we've had lots of really important and impactful technology in the past, and we are still all here, and we are on average still much better off today than we were 20, 30, 40 years ago. We're still dealing with problems of information overload and the fact that suddenly you hear about everything everywhere around the world, but we are as society dealing with these issues rather than a few companies around the world. And I think that is the most important bit.
Amazing. Joshua Weller, thank you very, very much. It has been an absolute delight. Aprio and Mindstone are hoping to be working together soon to unpack some client requirements around practical AI here in South Africa. We may be among the first to be doing this work in South Africa, which should be very exciting. So watch this space. But in the meantime, where can our audience learn more about Mindstone and follow your work or reach out directly if they'd like to know anything more from you?
Of course, yeah, you can just go to mindstone.com or mindstone.ai if you want to get in contact, joshua@mindstone.com directly.
Fantastic. Joshua, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure and hope to chat again soon.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Aprio Voice, a podcast from the reputation, management and strategic communications professionals at the Aprio Group.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.